Just recently, I asked him for a brocha. Me and for my son, do you know what he answered me? Unbelievable. I give you a brocha to you and to your wife and to your son. I just imagine him, blah, blah, blah. So he on his own, he assumed I had a wife, I guess, and walked in with two sons. I mean, he assumed that he gave a brocha to me and to my wife and to my children. And she said, he gave his brochas. He was not only a gone earlier, but a tremendous brother of the Torah. He was a tremendous gadol, literally a gadol in midos, every which way. A tremendous loss for the Jewish people. That this brought to you and to your wife and to your. I just imagine him about my wife. So he on his own, he assumed I had a wife, I guess, and walked in with two sons. I mean, he assumed that he gave a bracha to me and to my wife and to my children. And she was going to give brachas. He was not only a gone earlier, but a tremendous gadol of the Torah. He was also a tremendous gadol, literally a gadol in midos, every which way. A tremendous loss for the Jewish people that this great gadol and tzaddik were taken from us this week. Losses are very difficult to overcome. We don't see another individual that not by dragon, we don't see it. And therefore we have to be misfiled to Kadosh Baruch Hu, who should give us the strength to go on in a diminished world now that such a great tzaddik and gone was taken from us. And of course, as we learn in the Yom of Shabbos especially, which was one of the many specialties that Rav Auerbach Zatzal was known for. He was the one who would deal with all these difficult and thorny Shabbos shilas. Hundreds of shilas, some of the most critical and difficult ones that others would shy away from. 50 years ago plus, I believe, he wrote a sefer called Ma'ore Eish, which was the basic book about electricity and what they called the grumma and indirect causation, all this kind of stuff. But he was the one, he wrote the book on it. So many years ago. And through all these decades, he continued to rule on these and many other significant matters. This past summer, in Kemar Rosha, where we learned, I was privileged to learn about Shemitah. And one of the most important ones we used was, of course, his Sefer, for Madani Eretz, which was written, I think 50 years ago, 7 Shemitahs ago, 49 years ago, it was written, 50 years ago. He was a god of the Torah then. So, he was a tremendous honor, a tremendous humble person. And he's also going to look Mincha Shlomo. So, over the weekend, they had a Shaila back and forth for a Moshe Feinstein. He writes in his introduction to the Shaila that really, who was he to argue with Rav Moshe? He wouldn't even say anything. Rav Moshe asked him to write his opinion, so sure the Rav Moshe will print this. Otherwise, he wouldn't have printed it. It's just amazing level. He wouldn't even print the printing, which was a little bit against Rav Moshe, unless Rav Moshe gave him explicit permission to print it. Showed him that his humility went together with his greatness and so many other ways. I believe it was just last week when I told you about the facts. No, that was just came from Bichlai. Guess what? You're not going to believe it. Sunday morning. Someone came to my house for Shabbos, it was in the community, told me about what Rav Shlomo Zalman had said about the crackpots, and he has the copy with him. He has the tshuva in Rav Shlomo Zalman's own handwriting. It was written last week about the crackpots. Let me see it. He showed me Sunday morning. I actually saw it, and I had it in my hand. Sunday morning I was reading, then praying for Rafua Shalem. I was reading, in my own hand, I was reading the Ksav Yad about this. I'm going back and forth. We weren't zochet to that Rav Moshe that we wanted. So we have to try to lead our lives in the way they should be illuminated by the great Gaonim and Tzaddikim. Certainly, at a time like this, we are required to be strong in our commitment to Torah, to Shemayim, Shalom. From the Dalman Arba, the Tzaddik of Rav never was involved in some of these political intrigues back and forth, all the negatives unfortunately associated with this. He somehow managed in over 80 years living in the Holy City, a city which as we know is so filled with all kinds of factions. In fact, he somehow managed to be at peace with everybody. That's superhuman. Superhuman. And we're not superhuman, but even as humans, we have to try to avoid fights and avoid factions and avoid the rancor and the spite, the mean-spiritedness that sometimes is a negative result of, viewer Shemayim, Kanos, all kinds of stuff. Well, we're supposed to try to be Noach Labrius, Noach Lamokom, to try to be at peace with everybody. This is something which is a lesson that Rabban Zeva Tzadik the Baruch Hu taught everybody who knew him or knew about him, all the way he conducted himself. As we just say the Shemir Shabbos, which we've been doing already for a whole year, every page we go to Rebbe Reb Shlomo Zalman so many times, understand that really Reb Shlomo Zalman wrote the Sefer. I mean, not the old Sefer, but all what's new in the Sefer comes from him, as he wrote so many other Svarim. So he's the Rebbe of all of us. Your Rebbe, my Rebbe, everybody's Rebbe. Therefore, the loss is really staggering. You have to try to somehow go on. So we have to try to continue to learn. That's our job. What this Gaon would want us to do. No doubt about it, he want us to continue to learn. I was told that they gave us Havah. No, I spayed him by his Leviathan. So I read his Havah, and then a few words at sunset, I was it. They could have spoken for hours and hours and hours and hours and hardly scratched the surface. So actually what he would want to do is just to keep on learning and to quote him and to, I know what he'd want us to argue with him and to say yes and no and maybe and why. That's what we're going to be doing today. Try to find a few things from this Gadol, a Tzaddik, and try to discuss back and forth about the things that he said. Last week he spent a lot of time, and I have to ask Mechila. They told me that Shlomo Zalman Savor, he has Mechila for people. I mean, it's like almost like a joke. Somebody asked Mechila. Because anyone in the world doesn't have to ask Mechila, it's him. He's a famous one. He knows about his wife's Leviathan never over 10 years ago. His wife was Nifter, and he spoke about his wife's Leviathan, and he said, usually at a Leviathan, it's traditional that a person asks Mechila from the party. The party has passed away, in case there's something wrong, etc. I'll tell you the truth though, in over 55 years of marriage, he must have been married very young, but over 55 years of marriage, we never did anything that would require any man of mechila. Yes? I mean, if it would be someone else, say it's Kaiba. Say it's Kura. Chutz, what can you say to them? Rav Shlomo Zalman, the Isha Emes. He said, well, if that's mechila for my wife, he was trying to show that what a great woman she was, that she never had anything paid against him. Nothing he did it which offended her. He was trying to say how great she was. That's what that would show what he intended his remarks. But maybe an unintended result was how great he is. Never found how he was, that he was never done anything in 55 years. You can't go 55 seconds without insulting somebody. It's 55 years. This is mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling. Yeah. After this mechila, because we were very theoretical last week. I mean, it was not theoretical in the sense that it wasn't la'alokha, but it was la'alokha for the rabbanim, but they have to think more about whether you can build an erev and how you build an erev. And I did it really on purpose. After this mechila, I wanted to give you an idea of how complex the laws of erev and are. People shouldn't think, yeah, it's politics, the rabbis for this, the rabbis for that. No, there were disputes which are actually la'alokha. That's what we spoke about at great length last week. We spoke primarily about the non-Arab Arab, what the colloquial Arab, which means the Torah of Pesach brings, and at the end we spoke a little bit about Arab Hatzeres. I kind of begin the next chapter in Shemir Shabbos, which is certainly related, which is Perek Yudges, a very important Perek today especially, which is, what may a person go out with in the street when there's no Erev. Why it's so important today? Because it's so important today, people are so used to Erev, they forgot. In Eretz, every single city has an Erev. And they forgot what it is to be without an Erev. They don't know what the halakha is with no Erev. Terrible thing. And the Erev can go down. I was told the Queen's Erev went down last week. A number of Erev went down. Kew Hills was down. Kew Gardens was down. Forest Hills was down. There were a bunch of Erev down. One year when I was in Yerushalayim, even there the Erev was down. It was a tremendous snowstorm. Because they had five different Erev, and I think they all came tumbling down. There was a tremendous storm. You have to know what to do. Of course, if you live in a town where there's no Erev, or an Erev which you don't use for whatever reason, you have to know what the halacha is as well. So the Torah says that a person may not carry in an area which is called the Rishus HaRabim. And the Chazal say the same thing applies in a Karmelist. Carry in a normal way, it's a piece of Minatorah. If you carry in an abnormal way, it's a piece of Rabban. If you put something in your pocket, that's considered a perfectly normal way of carrying. And if you walk out with a thing in your pocket in the street before Amos, call it Issa D'Oraisa. I'd like to take a poll over here. He claims in this paper, in the footnote, that many women have a habit of putting a handkerchief under their wristwatch. Is that true? Who does it? Raise your hand.
My aunt's
do it. Older women, right. Yeah. Right over here. Kein darka shel noshim lalechas. He writes that if that's the way to do it, if you do it on Shabbos, if he says all right. And as the generation go on, they'll knock down to this is the rabbonim. All right? Makes a difference. Because some of the Phoenicians of Rabbanu, which you'll see, there are some possible who say, hey, we should Kavod Abrius. For Kavod Abrius means that the human dignity, it is permissible to do certain things that otherwise not in Rabbanu. Just recently I heard that Torah of Shlomo Zalman, the brother of the Tzaddik, he was discussing the issue of wheelchairs on Shabbos. And in conjunction with Rama, indirect, it's not a direct system. If you have a chance, we'll discuss probably in a future week. So, the Shulchan Aruch writes, the Ramah says that even though something is grama, it's also the Rabbanan, the rabbinical prohibition, should be allowed in normal circumstances. So, Shulchan Zalman was saying that for a person who was in a wheelchair, and if you will allow the person to use a wheelchair which is automated with the grama device, the person will be independent. If you disallow it and require that the person use a regular wheelchair which is not a no motor, the person will be dependent on someone to push him around. Since Rabbi Shlomo Zalman is characteristic godless, this is an issue of Kavod Abrius. The person to be independent as opposed to dependent on others is Kavod Abrius. He permitted the use of this kind of a device, this kind of a mechanism, which would otherwise be prohibited with the Rabbanan, because he used this as Kavod Abrius. Here too, if a person, some salt already said, if a person has a drippy nose and it is walking the street, what are you doing it? Drip, drip, drip. You have to have something to save you. That's also the issue of Kavod Abrius. If some salt writes that if a person has absolutely no alternative, you'd be permitted to really necessary to have some kind of handkerchief in a way which is the Rabbanon, which is an abnormal way which Kavod Abrius. What did he suggest there? To tie it around your foot. It's not a normal way of having a handkerchief around the foot. So I was suggesting that maybe you can have the handkerchief under your wristwatch. But according to Rav Neubert, you can't do that because it's a normal way to do it. So wait a few more years until it becomes abnormal, and then that'll be an eight in the case of Kavod Abrius. Okay. But that's only, again, they say Kavod Abrius, not a normal situation. Yes, it's permitted to wear clothes on Shabbos, yes. Not considered to be in the category of hotzah, of carrying. Not only one set of garments, it should be immediately without clothes, but even many sets of garments. Whatever's normal, is okay. Whatever's a normal use of it, okay. Now, what about I wear a jacket and I just put it over my shoulder and the sleeves, my hands are on the sleeves. It's a you walk around that way? You wear a jacket, a coat, over the shoulder, without turning the sleeves, and your hands in the sleeves. What's it in that kind of a situation? The post can stay in the because it's apparently a normal way of wearing it. If it's, however, a slight problem, it may fall off. And the Chazal are very concerned that the they fall off, they figure that means can they walk with it? That's the problem. What about gloves? Gloves are what is called a muff. Is that the right word for it? Muff. Well, that you don't need. I have the English for a child. I think it's the muff. Right? Did you wear the? Yeah, you put your hands in it. Right. That's also okay. Or earmuffs are okay. It's very cold. Now, why it must be very cold? He writes in a footnote, Shamati me'agrashad oyava. He writes Shlita, we write never played that out. The Dover Zeh Motsui, the possibility of removing gloves. A variety of reasons you want to, you know, use your hands with uncovered by the glove or surrounding it. It's Matsu Yosef Mikol Shar Barm Shinizku Bashas. In the Gemara, there are many prohibitions. You may do this and you may do this, you may take it off, you may walk with it. And Rabbi Zalman felt that this possibility of removing gloves is so great that it's more probable than any of the prohibitions found in the Gemara. And therefore, those are prohibited, certainly this should be prohibited. That's what it sounds like he's saying. Well, on the top, he says, okay. But at the bottom, I quoted Rav Shlomo Zalman, he seems to say, well, it's not such a great idea. But then the person can say, well, it's very, very, very cold. And then there's grounds to be lenient. But other than that, it's better to avoid wearing gloves. If you have the cold, put them in your pockets. Assuming you put it in a pocket, no? The ladies' coats are fine. Yeah, good. It's very cold. It's still the ground to be defensive. It's an Arab. Another thing, even if you don't use the Arab for whatever reason, but you can rely on the Arab for certain things which are, of course, the many can use even without an Arab. In other words, let's say you don't carry your Arab. And you don't wear gloves when there's no Arab. But you can wear gloves with an Arab even if you don't use it. Because it's so many different reasons to be lenient. Okay. Now, you said before you can wear any kind of garment you want. And the reason is that garments protect the body. It keeps the body warm, protects the body. However, if the purpose of the garment is exclusively to protect other garments, then it's a problem. Maybe it's considered to be a situation category of hotzo, for example. Put something over your hat to keep the hat dry or clean. And it's not necessary to protect the body. That is the problem. Which is, of course, whenever it's raining, wouldn't you get wet? Wouldn't your body get wet if you didn't protect the hat or whatever's on top of you? Maybe it depends on how hard it's raining, or what the situation is exactly. In other words, if it's raining very hard, then the rain can go through your hat. And you can actually get your head wet. Then it's permissible to put some kind of a protective covering over the hat. If it's just a light drizzle, you're not going to get wet, just the hat may get ruined. And by putting a cover on, you're going to protect the hat, then it's a problem. Therefore, he says, if you wear something which is deras malbush, if it's the actual normal way of wearing a garment, then it's permissible even if it's just to protect the lower garment, the garment under it, but if it's deras malbush. Let's repeat. If it's derech malbush, it's worn as a garment, then it's permissible even if it's just to protect a garment underneath it. If, however, it is not derech malbush, it's only permissible if it protects the body. So he says you can wear a raincoat over a winter coat, just to protect the winter coat from getting wet, because it's a regular form of a garment. Similarly, you can wear rubbers. Use the rubbers just to protect the shoes, because it's a form of a garment. You can wear a plastic covering for a hat, a men's hat. Yeah, the one over there. That looks like the way it looks, but I don't own one of those plastic covers. You don't have to look at it right now, but you'll see it's not exactly in ship shape. I worn it too many times in the rain. And I don't have one of those plastic coverings. Talmud, David, Taj, and Rabbah quoted over here that's considered to be derech malbush. You know, the plastic covering by itself really is just a covering. There's no real shape. But since it does fit the hat, and some people, they leave it on even when it's not raining all the time. It's a rainy day. They have it on, and if that stops raining, don't take it off. It's on. They leave it on. It's considered to be kind of a derech malbush. This is what the Flemazam of the Talis quoted here has said. The Moshe of the Talis that they disagreed. The Moshe says no. He said that the nylon covering is prohibited. Even according to him, if it's raining so hard, it's going to go right through the hat. It would be permissible. Get your body wet, your head wet. Rav Moshe's father, how can you wear rubbers on Shabbos? Even that should be prohibited according to him. Well, the rubbers keep you warm. It's true. They keep you warm a little bit. They warm the legs of people. It's called a cold day. And what if it's a hot day? Well, maybe we'll get through. It keeps them. It's one of those unresolved questions. Zalman Tzal is also quoted over here as saying that the top of the rain hats are a problem for a different reason. We're afraid if it's going to stop raining, we'll take it off and carry it. The Chazal are afraid of these things happening. The thing is that maybe this prohibition only existed through a Rishus HaRav and Gemura, a complete Rishus HaRav, which we don't have nowadays. There's another question. He asked the Shaila. Why aren't you afraid that a person is wearing glasses? If it's raining, why aren't you afraid of Shlomo Zalman Tzal asks? He'll take off the glasses to wipe them, and he'll start carrying them. Four hours.
Thank you.
So there are some gadol who are not afraid of these things happening. But we are still, of course, that glasses are both supposed to even. We're kind of not worried about this happening. Wait a second. How do you go out with glasses? Glasses is not a garment. So the garment is permissible to wear on Shabbos in the street, but there's no air. How do you wear glasses? You use the word wear glasses, okay. That's an English expression. But you wouldn't call glasses a malbush, would you? Not a garment. Garment. The word for glasses or anything else which is not a garment, which serves a purpose, is called a tachshit. A little, we understand tachshit to mean an ornament. But the word tachshit is a much broader term and means many more things. The normal way of usage is considered part of you and not something you're carrying. Not you're just carrying your glasses. You're wearing your glasses. Whatever is made for the purpose of a tachshit, either let's start with the beautification process. Beautiful. Beautiful, gorgeous. Then the custom is that it's permissible. Why the custom? Why custom? Well, the Gemara said it's not allowed. Not allowed. What are we afraid about? She's going to take it off primarily women's jewelry. She's going to take it off, and then she'll carry it to the street. Why should she take it off? Well, she'll want to show a friend. There are other reasons that are given in the Gemara. Nevertheless, despite that the custom is, according to Shulchan Aruch, that we're lenient about this anyway. Even though the Gemara says we shouldn't do it, we do it anyway. How can I be? How can we go against the Gemara? Well, it's so difficult that there are four distinct reasons given in the Shulchan Aruch why we go against the Gemara. Well, the meaning of women, especially about women primarily, the Shulchan Aruch, they divide the laws of Otsar into two simanim. Shin Aleph is for men, and Shin Gimel is for women. You put a simon and Shin Bet in between. This is really true. They have all simon in between the two simanim. I don't know why. That's exactly the way it is. So in Simon Shin Aleph, Sif Yud Ches, it says that you can't walk around these things because you may come to take it off and carry it. And you really shouldn't even wear it in the house. We're afraid you're going to go outside the street. Nowadays, the custom is for women, they wear it not only in the house, even in the street. How come? So the first reason is given is you're really not allowed. The famous expression you've heard about many times. Mutter shiu shogigos value mezidus. Better don't tell them because they're not going to listen anyway. If the rabbis do that, jewelry is a big etzahara for ladies to go with jewelry. So therefore, if you're going to tell them they're going to do anything, don't say anything. That's reason one. But that doesn't help you anymore. You already learned it. So that reason, that won't work. Some say that they are of the opinion that only the Rishus HaRabim is in prohibitive, and now we no longer have a Rishus HaRabim. Second reason. A third reason is given. In the olden days, the women would show off their jewelry on Shabbos and take it off and show their friends, because they would only be seen with jewelry on Shabbos. They would never wear jewelry during the week. Today, women wear jewelry even during the week. There's no need to worry about that happening. Those are the three reasons given in the Shulchan Aruch about the custom women have today. Again, there's no reason that we're afraid to tell them that otherwise. Or there's no Rosh Hashanah nowadays. Or they go out with their jewelry during the week and there's no fear they're going to take it off. For whatever reason, the custom is among almost everybody that women wear jewelry on Shabbos, even when there's no Eruv. Something which is not beautiful, or rather it's functional, it can still be called a tachshit, a garment. It's permissible under certain limited conditions. For example, somebody who can only walk with a cane can't walk at all without a cane. In the Shulchan Aruch, he may walk in the street with a cane. That cane is like his shoe, a big shoe called a cane. He enables him to walk. But it's only true, says the Shulchan Aruch, if he literally cannot walk without the cane. Can't go in without a cane. Can't walk anywhere. So he can't walk without a cane. So the cane is considered like part of him. He always walks with the cane. He can walk in his house without a cane, the Mishnah Berurah says. He can't walk in the street with the cane. The issue about a blind man who uses a cane to walk, it's a big question if he walks with the noise. He could walk without it, but not in the street, because he doesn't know where to bump into. It's not so simple. Shmuel Shabbos has one of his sort of kapats over here. Yesh lishol shelas chacham. That's what he's the chacham. I mean, I don't understand. It's one of those close calls. They didn't want to make a definitive statement. Yes.
Don't the blind man be covered or breathe, because he'd be dependent upon someone if he couldn't use his...
That's a good point.
Because if he can't use his thing, then he has to have someone walk.
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe covered up Rias. Maybe. The Shlomo Zalman talked before, should be independent. Could be. Good question. What if it's slippery outside? know, it's icy. Snowy. Here too, the Todd says, Mr. Brewer says, that you shouldn't use a cane, because in other places, you could walk there without a cane, you just get a little scared, but really you can't walk. Walk it from the bottom of the fell on the bottom. Someone never has an amputee and has a prosthesis, which is a fake leg, allowed to walk with it, that's considered his, that's his foot. What about glasses? Can you wear glasses on Shabbos? So, disputes. There are those say you can't wear glasses on Shabbos. There was one rabbi who used to live in my community in Riverdale who would not wear glasses on Shabbos. I mean, wear it in the house. This rabbi had an interesting, he had a house and he had a shul downstairs. Couldn't get from the house to the shul without going into the street. So what he did was he had a pulley system. He would put the glass out the window and lower it with a pulley without, you know, without to the window of the shul. That was a fence out there. It was within the fence. He didn't want to carry. Once he went to visit me on Shabbos many years ago, he came to see me, and it was Friday night. That was when the area was first built. This was in the area a little bit. I came with his son. I must go back a long time. And he came with his son and he did not wear glasses. He came and he walked a mile to my house without glasses. And I don't think he really was able to see much. He kept about really just in a fog. He couldn't see. But he wouldn't walk on Shabbos without wearing glasses. Why not? Either he was afraid that the glasses considered carrying proper, or he was afraid that the shash make take it off. And therefore you can't wear it, although I don't see how that chashka exists today. The Chayonim is talking about those glasses like this, you know? Those, what do they call those? No. But only on the nose. Whatever you call them. Which could fall off. It would take it off frequently. But the glasses that we have, which go around the ears and stay on the most people wear glasses, at least if they're near sighted as I am, they wear it the whole day. They never take it off. So therefore, that's hard to reason to see why that should be a problem. Permissible. Reading glasses is a problem. The person can be allowed to take it off, but on the contrary, it makes it difficult for him to see in the street. Bifocals, okay. The sticky issue is that people wear glasses half the time. Some of reading glasses, they read, you know, they don't wear glasses all the time. They wear glasses half the time. So you have to make a chashash, you may take it off in the middle. That's a questionable call. He doesn't discuss that really. The same thing is two extremes. You wear it all the time versus reading glasses. If you wear it half the time, it's arguable that only you wear it half the time when you're walking in the street, you want it on. Because you want to read the sign, you want to see people. It's exactly the time you want it on. When you come to the house and you read, you take it off. But when you're in the street, you try to wear them. You don't always wear them, but you try to have them to wear them. There's less chance of you taking them off in the street. Because of the minute, it's okay. But it's not so simple. Sunglasses, it's very complicated. Oh, contacts are okay, by the way. But sunglasses is an interesting question. If it's just regular sunglasses without a prescription, he says it's prohibited. Why? Simple. Sun will disappear, and now the sun is dark, cloudy, just take your sunglasses off and start carrying them. It's a chashash. Therefore, you shouldn't wear the clip-ons. If you put on the regular, it's also a problem, because you may, the sun's hard behind the clouds, you may take them off. That's what he writes. Prescription sunglasses are okay. If you can't take them off, somebody can't take regular glasses off. He says that if you have the kind of clip-on that you don't take off, you just slip up. You know? Baseball players now. Alright? He thinks that's okay. Ah, but if you flip it up, shouldn't it be prohibit it, it's not serving a function now. No, it's not considered to be a problem because it still can serve a function the right this minute. It's not serving a function. It gives an example. If you have a raincoat with it, you have a belt, and he doesn't tie the belt. So the post can say that it's okay. Or a hood, which is not covering his head right now. The post can say it's okay. It's considered to be part of the garment. Here too, we suggest that the lip ups, if you will, are considered part of the regular glasses. 100% a perfect comparison. Because the case of the, they're talking about garments, they're talking about a takshin. Okay, that's what the Shulchan Shabbos suggests. What about someone who is in a cast or a bandage? Have this been on Shabbos? The answer is yes. Is it a part of you? In your body. Your hand in a sling. It's also okay. You have an earache, you put cotton there. He says it's also okay. You said contacts, he talks about they call today sanitary napkins. It's also okay. So if a woman gets married and there's something called a mok dochuk, which is a halachic requirement, we call it hefsekara, not going into the laws of that halachic now, then it's a big question whether it's allowed to be, whether you can go out in the street without shopping. It's not really needed to protect the body, it's just sort of for halachic purposes. So many poskim say that it's not allowed. And sure enough, when Shlomo Zalman, they're going to try to find a way to say why it is allowed. Here, arches, that's the right word in your shoes. You know, is that the right word? Maybe a little extra sole or an extra, all kinds of sodics, all kinds of things they put in the shoes. That's considered part of the shoe. You have paper in your hat. They buy a hat. Oh, I'm 7 and a quarter and 7 and an eighth, and I can't get it right. So I'll give you a big one. Put a little bit of paper in between. It's also okay. Considered part of that. A person could walk out on Shabbos with a feather in his cap, literally. Or a handkerchief in his pocket, in his bench, and it's put in there for purposes of decorative purpose, considered part of the garment itself. So it's called a semel tenua or ergun, or ot yitzdainut, which is kufim beveget, or pin, shows that you're the arista, or you belong to Bnei Akiva, or I don't know whatever else you have. That's what he says. Chucks. He says okay. What about a wristwatch? Saw the bracelet first. A bracelet with keys attached to the bracelet. Charles said it's no good. A watch, which is hanging from a anak. What's an anak? Anakim legargero sefer. It's a necklace. It's also no good. So that's the Mishnah Berurah. Comes from Shlomo Zalman Zatzal and says he thinks if they're both decorative, it's okay. Even though there's an additional benefit to be gained from the watch, to know the time. He says, just because you know the time, it knocks out the status of a decoration. The problem, we shall learn, let's learn that now, that if something has two purposes, that the purpose of a takshin, as well as the purpose of some kind of an outside use, where the Shulchan Aruch says it's no good. Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Shin Aleph, Sif Yud Aleph. Very important Sif. Shin Aleph is the men's section. But the same part of both. It says, Dover Ha'asil L'Tachshit U'L'Shtamish Lo. There are two purposes. It's pretty key. Mafteich HaSdosh of Keter. It's awesome. Yesh Matirin. Some say Asr and some say Mutter. But even the Matirin is only permissible if you look at the small print and the fine print. If your intention is for Atasha, it's for beautification. Not if your intention is for the usage. So Shlomo Zalman has the kasha over here. You wear this watch for two purposes. As a decoration and as a use to know what time it is. So therefore, the corner of the Shulchan Aruch would appear to be prohibited. So he says, no, not at all. In the case which we're describing in Shulchan Aruch, when you use it, it's not decorative. In other words, you have a key, and when you come to the door, you'll pull the pin off, and now you'll open the door and then put it back again. But since when you use it, it wasn't serving as a decorative piece, so therefore it's prohibited. But arguments of Shlomo Zalman. If you have this necklace with a watch on it, even when you look at the time, it still doesn't lose the status of a decorative piece. It's still beautiful on your necklace. And it has it hanging down. You don't remove it. This is a big issue when they use something called pocket watches. Make it a comeback, no? Pocket watch, no? I happen to catch a glance, I get the bills of paper. So, Clarence Strauss, it was printed in America, this edition, it has I happen to notice this morning, there's an ad in the first page, someone selling jewelry. It says, pocket watches for under $600. But apparently I saw that people bought pocket watches again. But it was the passé. The big discussion, the beer halacha, is absolutely prohibited if it's a kind of a pocket watch that goes in your vest pocket, you can't see it unless you pull it out. That's certainly prohibited. If you hang it from a chain on your neck, everyone can see it, he thinks it's still prohibited. Why? Because the main purpose is to see the time. And the kishut and the decorative part is secondary. Well, the proof, he says, if it stops, people don't wear it. Well, that may not be the case. Some people, they would wear it even if it stops. It's for the show off. If it's used for both, Talmid that says it's not allowed. And the example that he's referring to is a signet ring. Who knows about signet rings? Raise your hand, very important. I don't know about signet rings. Ever see a picture? Ever see a signet ring? You see him somewhere? He wore a ring and had a what? Stamp. I have a major, very important question. I must find out the answer to this question. How did they use these signet rings? No, I don't see it. But I have a question like this. Did they use the signet ring to stamp it while the ring was still on the finger? Or did they take it off the finger, stamp it, and put it back on the finger? Who knows the answer to that question? Who knows? It's just a $4,000 question for me. How did they use it? They took it off, or they did it while it was on the finger? Who has an opinion? I got one opinion in the front. So who has an opinion? Well, they have it in the movies or in the books. What do they say there?
I don't know what it
says,
but I think
they
have it on.
So where
did
my flight
is
over here?
I think they keep it on.
Some of them left it on, and some of them took it off.
It doesn't make sense either. They're putting the steel, which isn't so far away from their skin, it's not so much, not so raised, into hot wax. And if it's a king or some kind of nobleman, why would you want to keep burning his hand?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I always thought that they kept it on. And the reason I thought that way was because, why is he wearing it all the time? Why does he bother wearing it? What?
It's his signature.
Put it in his pocket. Where all the time? I thought, that's what I thought. But it's tremendously relevant. Put it in your pocket, you won't lose it. So I carry it. What's today's version of a signet ring? A credit card. You put it on your finger. You put it in your pocket. I always thought, like you did, that the reason that the signet ring on its finger was for convenience sake. Oh yeah? Bingo. Big. That's what I thought. But Rav Shlomo Zalman, they had sadly brothers like you that they used to take it off. See that? That was his version of history. Rav Moshe Zatzal, I believe, said like you that it was kept on. If I read it correctly. So I think the Machlokes Gedolei HaTorah of our generation, what they did in signet rings in the time of the Talmud Bavli. And look at history books. I don't know. Get an assignment for next week. When was the signet ring? It's very, very important. I'll tell you why. It's a critical, critical shaylah. Rav Shlomo Zalman bases his entire heder on the assumption that the signet ring was taken off. The signet ring was just taken off, so therefore, if it's also lezeh v'lezeh, the tashit pul tashmish for both purposes, for it's pretty, and it's also functional, it's prohibited, because the function is done while it's not pretty. Assume that it was used while it was on the finger, but he just ignores the Yerushalmi, but for whatever reason, but he thinks the Bavli argues, I don't know why. Kids is a big disputed fact, what happened with the signet ring? I very much know, if you ask your history professor, or somebody, or some art professor, I don't know who to ask you, what happened with the signet ring? How did they use it? Very important for me to find out. It's relevant, but a wristwatch. Both Rav Moshe and Rav Shlomo Zalman seem to say a wristwatch might be permissible. But it's no way. Did Tom also want to add? They both said it's mutter, but for different reasons. Rav Moshe's reason to me is a plea, it's against Yerushalmi, I don't understand Rav Moshe. If Rav Moshe's facts are right, and the signet ring was used on the finger, I always thought, then it seems to me as the conclusion should be for us that the watch is prohibited. If Rav Shlomo Zalman's facts are right, but it was used after it was taken off, then there's a much greater case to permit the use of the wristwatch. I'll serve it as a toxic. Commonwealth one in?
They
both said it's Muslim for different reasons. Rav Moshe's reason to me is a plea against Yerushalmi. I don't understand Rav Moshe. If Rav Moshe's facts are right, and the signet ring was used on the finger, I always thought, then it seems to me as a conclusion should be for us that the watch is prohibited. If Rav Shlomo Zalman's facts are right, that it was used and the heft was taken off, then it's a much greater case to permit the use of the wristwatch. Serves as a tachshit as well as being functional. This only has reference to something which is functional and beautiful at the same time. Then Gedolei Yisrael suggests perhaps to be permissible. Both Rav Moshe and Shlomo Zalman, two Gedolei Hador, suggest maybe it's okay. And they have different ways of handling this takshit or the tashmit at the same time. One seems to ignore it, and one seems to be shaman himself, and one says the distinction is really taking it on, taking it off or leaving it off. Okay. Now, when it comes to the wristwatch, though, of Shlomo Zalman, there's a different bar. He doesn't consider it to be a takshit. He wouldn't wear it if it's a time stop. True. So if that's true, he says, then it's not a takshit at all. Now he has a little bit difficult. If I have this beautiful, beautiful gold watch, well, all that glitters. This beautiful gold watch that I'm wearing, so I mean, it's gorgeous. So if this clock stops, I mean, I would probably take it off. But maybe someone else would want to wear this gold piece. I have a watch with a plain, what do you call it, plain leather. So that's not nice. So Shlomo Zalman asks that. Rav Moshe, I think, is part of that too. And parentheses, Shlomo Zalman is called in parentheses. Well, maybe even that's okay. Ein limcho. But everybody wears it, I consider it a malbush. It's on the body, it's never taken off. But the pulse is sitting when they take off, the same story again. Perhaps is a question. That's the question. Rav Moshe allowed it, Rav Shlomo Zalman. They both allow with a kvetch. Okay, it's better you should wear it, but it's been prohibited for people. Now, what if you have, look at this. Ever see this? But do they serve any purpose? It's not about anything else. Decorative, yeah. So can I wear these buttons to my Sulan Shabbos? Yes or no?
Yeah, it's part of it.
Yes? Yes? It's a decorative piece that's sewn onto the garment. Mentioned before, if something is used with the garment, it's part of the garment, it's permissible even though it's not sewn on, it's not functional right now. Like the belt, the raincoat, or the hood, which is in the back of the coat, which right now it's not being used. Certainly if it is being used, there's various pins that can, you have a safety pin to keep two parts of the garment together, you have a body pin holding a kerchief or a yarmulke or a tie pin. These things are all permissible. What about what he calls a kaftore reserva? Reserva. No, I've heard of that? Let me show you one. I'm not sure I haven't tried it. I didn't look at it before the class. Here's the hat I was talking about. What's this doing here? This serves no function right now, I don't think. There's nothing on the side that goes into it. What's this doing here? I think it's a spare, no? I don't even know. So what is it? Have a spare tire? I think, no. Serving a function? Oh, it's holding the inside one? They're not going to smoke. Well, you're right. You're right. They all have smoke. You're right. This has two functions, I guess. I guess if the worst came to worst, the other two also have to sleep on the inside. But this, I guess, is also a reserve. I don't know. Some garments have reserve. I won't look, but my shirt may ever have reserve. So shirts also sometimes have, you know, the button, and also have to, hey, where'd it go? Reserve. Can you go with these things on Shabbos in the street? So the Shmirah Shabbos says, no. You have to go to every garment that you buy, you have to have an OU, an OS, I don't know, it's Kosher for Shabbos. What? Well, this is decorative. Whatever's decorative is okay. Whatever's just preserver, he said it's not allowed. In my opinion, it's allowed. But Baruch Hashem, if I look at the bottom, who else says it's allowed? None other than? That we have, Rav Shlomo Zalman said that perhaps it's permissible. I also think it's permissible. Sewn on, it's considered to be a part of the garment. And therefore it's considered to be butnel, secondary to the garment. I think it's permissible. Yes? Oh. You weren't here last term. You went to carry you. Forget about that. Bad news.
Can you wear it?
With the tag or without the tag?
With
you would want to do that, would you? tuck it in. It's no Arab though, that's a problem.
It's an Arab.
But see, it's hard to say that it's bundled to the garment. If it's an Arab, why not? But if there's no Arab, it's hard to say that it's considered secondary to the garment. You know why? Because you plan to take it off as soon as you make Abdullah. And the post in my reserve is still there for 10 years. Still there. So, yeah. What about a handkerchief? If you sew the handkerchief onto the garment, I'm saying it's good. It's sewn onto the garment. It's considered to be part of the garment. It's secondary to the garment. That's the question. That's the key question. That's decorative. That we said it's permissible even if it's not sewn into the lapel. I'm talking about something to blow your nose and you're walking in the street. If it's not sewn, you can't wear it on Shabbos. That's why. It's sewn in for halakhic purposes.
Where do you sew it?
Somewhere in here, with all the tea. Since no one is going to do it, we'll forget about it. Forget it. I never said it. Forget about it. Oh, here's a puppy. If there are parts, as I told you, there are parts of it which are connected to the garment, but you don't plan to leave it there like that, they can constitute a halakhic problem. Here's an example. I have a button, and the button became loose, and I don't plan to use the button, so I'm afraid if I put it into the button hole, it's going to fall off. That button may not be considered secondary to the garment. And it's really better not to wear that garment out of the Erev on Shabbos. Wow. Yes. I have a button. All of a sudden on Shabbos, the button is so loose, I can't use it anymore. So it's a problem. It's not considered secondary to the garment right now. It's a serious problem. Now, this one. I have a button. They have, sometimes they have these, well, somebody has it, coach. You have a button, it doesn't go into a hole, it goes into a loop. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? Yeah. The loop on one side and the button on the other side. You know, I was a kid, I used to wear those. You have it? See, a perfect example. a button on one side and a loop on the other side. And let's say, for argument's sake, the loop ripped. Or the button fell off. Now you have a non-functioning piece. Right now it can't work. It both. It's true. That's perfectly functioning. It's considered to be secondary to the garment. But in this case, it's a serious problem because it really should wear on Shabbos. Similarly, it's a very common question. They have these, what they call these little hooks. Is that the right word? Hello.
To hang it up.
To hang it on.
Yeah.
A loop in the back. Here it is. That. So I don't usually use it, but let's say I have it, use it. And then it tips. Now you can't hang it because it's torn. So it's hanging down. If you plan to fix it, you can have a problem. If you don't plan to fix it, it's just there forever until Mashiach comes. It's considered secondary to the garment itself. If you plan to fix it, it constitutes a problem. Now, you have the following situation. I have a tag, whether it be a laundry tag or a price tag I've got to take off, or a, how should I call it, suga skora, the type of name brand it is, whatever, which is supposed to be taken off, or a, again, if you plan to take it off, it's a problem. If you plan to leave it there forever, it's not a problem. For example, I have it here. I assume it's true. Non-shotness. Right here, my coat. Non-shotness. So you're allowed to wear that on Shabbos. You don't plan to take it off. You plan to leave it there forever. Okay. Now, yes.
Well,
if you plan to fix it, it's a problem. If you don't plan to fix it, it's okay. Not interesting chumra over here. You should not put things in your pockets on Shabbos, even in your house, for fear that you may carry it in the street. You'll forget to take it out when you walk outside to the street. It's even true on Arab Shabbos, just before Shabbos. We say it every week, and we come to Shul B'Mamad Likin, right? How's it go? Rashi is big of Shabbos, Arab Shabbos, and Hashecha, Shema, Yishkaf, V'Yetze. Om Rav Yossi, Hilchasa, Rapsa, the Shabbos. I mean, if it applies on Friday, it certainly applies on Shabbos. You shouldn't wear things in your pockets on Shabbos, that's what it says. No one knows about this, but it says in Shulchan Aruch. We say it every week. I really have to sleep when I say that. I don't know what they're talking about. That's what it says. Said before, a person needs a handkerchief. So what do you do with it? Sewing it in, you already rejected. So what do you do? The person can wear the handkerchief as a scarf. Probably need two of them though. You want to go around your neck unless you're very thin. So you get you wear it as a kind of a scarf. That's one way to do it. It's a kind of a garment. Or use it as a belt. You gotta take out your regular belt. Otherwise the belt is superfluous. Oh, what did you say the word? What was that word you just said? Key. I was waiting a whole night for that. Key. How do you carry a key? So I'm sorry to break the news to you, ladies, but in my opinion, there's no way you can carry a key on Shabbos. No way. You have to get married and have your husband should be the Shabbos guy for you. He should be the one to find a way to carry the key. When I lived in Washington Heights or in the Riverdale, there was no air for every week came out, I carried the key. How did I do it? Why couldn't she do it the way I did it? I'll tell you why. There were two ways for a man to carry a key to heaven. One is a pie clip. I don't have a tachlis, it's true, but people have tachlis. It serves a function as a garment, and therefore the fact that there's a key on it, it's no big deal. It only works for one, though. I think I had five clips and five keys in the back. For one, or failing that, you see this? What's this thing called? Something? Oh, what's it called? Oh, I know it's dumb. What's this called? What's this thing called? There's a word for it in Hebrew, which is English for a shop, is that a word? You know English language?
The buckle?
It's called the buckle?
No,
it's
not the buckle.
Yes, my left hand. Whatever it is, make that into a key. This should be a key. No. Get rid of this. And go to a store, they'll make it for you. They'll place the east side, I don't know where it exists anymore. They'll make it the key.
And you take your belt up and open the door.
And then whenever you use your belt, you use this to go into the hole of the belt. This way it serves a function as part of holding up your pants. When I was young, then we had to have, that's what I used to use, but I wasn't so good. We had then, they had, and they still have it now. We went to the store, we bought an elastic belt. An elastic belt, which had, I can't describe it to you properly, but there's nothing like it. On one side, it had two clips. On this side it had two little clips. And on this side, you would put the key, and the two clasps would grab the key, and that would close the belt. Am I making myself understood? The two clasps on the right side would grab the key on the left side, and that's how it would close the belt. The problem is, who needs the key? You could manage that belt without the key. How do you do that? Because how did the key get off? The key was being held by a little loop, which the back side of the key, this little hole in the key would fit into the, this little hole in the key, see this little hole, the key has a hole, would fit into that little thing. You have the two clasps coming out that would grab it like this, now keep your pants up, right? The shadow is, who needs the key? Forget the key, but the little loop which holds the key, stick one of those clasps into that loop, and then you can hold your pants up without the key. So the answer is, if you did that, it wouldn't be straight, because it would be too high or too low, it wouldn't work exactly right. The key is perfectly centered, so that's the reason that we were permissible. We thought it was permissible too. But it's better, it's going to be something, which we never did it, but it's better to have the buckle used use it every single week. I hardly use it, but those who use it, it's worthwhile purchasing the, spending a few extra dollars and getting that buckle, should be the key itself. It's supposed to be elastic. Yes? Ladies' pins.
Yeah.
Okay. In my opinion, ladies' pins, which are used for keys, are no good. And the reason is that they're used at best, for two purposes. I said before. Litashit and litashmish, for beauty and for a function. And the Yerushalmi says explicitly, it's used for two purposes, it is prohibited. The only way that Rav Shlomo Zalman said it's okay is if it serves both functions simultaneously. You can't open the door while that pin is on your lapel. I don't think it's even an acrobat to do that. You take it off, and then open it, and then put it back on again. That's no good. That's why I think that trick is no good. You name the trick, I couldn't think of a good one. What? Oh, no. The belt is not permissible because it's beautiful. But there it serves a function as part of a garment. That's why the tartan and the belt, which men are accustomed to wear, you can put the key on them. But I don't think there's anything in a woman's wardrobe that I know about, I'm not an expert, but I know about, that could have a key serve, you know, they usually don't wear buckles like this, and they usually don't wear tie clips. What? You're right. If you have a charm bracelet, then according to Rav Shlomo Zalman, it's not bad. Like if you have a charm bracelet, and if you according to Rav Shlomo Zalman, you can somehow open the door while the charm bracelet is still on your hand, is that possible?
Yeah.
Well, then maybe according to Rav Shlomo Zalman, you're right. See? I don't understand Rav Shlomo Zalman too well. That depends on the signet ring. But do you see? Now you really have to go do your homework. Remember about the wristwatch. The signet ring is going to depend upon this. If they used to use the signet ring, as you said, while it was still on, then forget it. Then that's against Kasha and Rav Shlomo Zalman. He's assuming they took it off. So yeah, we have a week to find out. Well, you only have to Shabbat to find out if you want to use that charm bracelet. But that's not bad. You're right. According to Rav Shlomo Zalman, I think that the charm bracelet should be possibly permissible. See, now, I didn't think of that because I don't like this whole idea. I thought about the signet ring. See, I always thought you were right about the signet ring. Maybe you stand it on the finger. But now that I'm not so sure anymore, we have a machlokes here in the class. We have to find out what the facts were. It hinges upon the charm bracelet situation. Yes? It doesn't matter who's on Shabbos. As long as it's something which is normal. That's a good question. You ask a good question. Wait a minute. It's a good question. Maybe you're saying like this. Maybe the signet ring is prohibited because it's only used during the week. Used on Shabbos also. It's a logical point, but none of the posts can make it. I don't know why, because that's a good point. I don't think anyone else hold on. For some reason, I never saw that point used anywhere. Probably the post can feel it doesn't make a difference. Whether you're using on Shabbos or not, it doesn't really matter that much. Yes? Yeah, it's in the carrying, but so what? It's in your... Oh, private house or
you
live
in a private house.
You live
in a house.
But an apartment house, you have an
Arab.
There's no Arab? Oh, it's a problem. That is a problem. The problem really is not carrying 4 amas, because the mat is less than 4 amas from your door. The problem is the mat, potentially where the mat is. If the mat's on a porch or a flight of steps up, and Kibbutz should say Yoki, right? So that's not a problem. If the mat is set up on the first ground level and there's no fence around it, so it's called a carmelis, when you put the key into the door, it's a problem. It's a Shemir Shabbat, there are two kinds of keys, two kinds of locks, I should say. Sometimes it's a hole all the way through. You can see through it. That's worse. That's called Koyer Shayachin. If it's not, in the back is just a turn. Most things have a turn. Today I believe that the Shemir Shabbat said it's okay, but to be careful, don't move the door more than an absolute trifle. In other words, when you want to, assuming the door pushes in, both doors push in, right? So you gotta turn the key, and then really, if possible, pull the lock out, pull the key out before you even before you move the door. Sometimes you can't do that, and you have to turn it an extra time, right? Okay. An extra time, just move it a centimeter, pull out the key, put it back on the mat, and then open the door.
And
you have to leave the key outside. Well, yeah, if there's a carmelis, and the house we should say yeah. Right. Okay, yes? Okay, that's not bad. If a woman makes some kind of a contraption with which the key is part of a safety pin, but it's not serving as a beautification, but rather as a like a tie clip. And it might be okay, but can you do that?
Well,
doesn't sound right. Is it too long? Which what? No, that's no good. It has to see the advantage of the tie clip or the buckle is that the key itself is part of the system. So you can make some kind of a deal with this part of the system, but I don't see how that could be done. The charm bracelet, I think, is the best hope. Assuming the signet ring history comes out okay, then there's a chance of the charm bracelet. Other than that, I don't see any way at this point. Yes?
Well, with the charm bracelet, or even with wearing the key of the necklace, like
you can
change.
No.
Well, I'm having a hard time grasping the signet ring issue, because
the very fact that there are two disagreeing opinions means that it could be used either way. The function of the ring.
Question, I know it could be used either way. What, how do they wear it at the time of the Gemara? So yes, how do they use the signet ring? Do they take it off or do they not take it off? That's a critical issue.
It could be used whether it's on
it. Of course, we know it could be used. It could be used. How did they use it? That's the issue. I don't know. You have to look at the history books or something. Yes? So therefore what? Don't move. You open the door.
You're right.
You don't move. You open the door. Oh my, we're even late. One last thing. Don't give your sitter to a child under my mitzvah to carry the shul for you. The pasuk in the Holy Torah. Lo sasa kol malacha ato vincha. Vincha means under my mitzvah. People make a big mistake about this. If you do it for your own purpose, that's a different story. For your son, I mean, for your son's purpose, he can have a sinner, then there might be a right in no error. But for your purpose, we have to stop here with the prayer of confess. Commit the shem next week. Continue with Shemir Shabbat. Oh, next week we start Mukta. What's the Mukta book? The Mukta book? Bring it in. Thank you.